Rob Serjanik and Matt Tidcombe with you again. This is Footy Roundup, episode 4. Matt, I feel like this has gone by very quickly.
It has. It's coming on pretty quick, but we're still going.
We're down now to the nuts and bolts of our World Cup preview here. We're the last two groups we're previewing today, including, I guess, what many are people and myself as well are referring to as the group of death. Is Group G to you, Matt, the group of death?
Yes, I would say so. It has the, out of the four teams that are in the tournament, in this group, sorry, all four teams have a legit reason they feel they can get out of this group. The group is made up of Portugal, Germany, Ghana, and the United States of America. I mean, off the top of your head, you look at it and say Germany and Portugal would be the two best teams, and they are the two best teams of those four.
On paper, for sure.
On paper, definitely. But Ghana and USA are very good soccer teams in their own right, and this isn't going to be a walk in the park for any of these four teams.
When you look at the pedigree of a Ghana and a US, they've done some damage in previous tournaments as well.
Yeah, they have. I mean, Ghana made that quarterfinal run in 2010, and I mean, they could have gone further. The USA, they had a quarter run in 2002, but they've struggled in the last couple of World Cups. But
they tend to usually get out of their group, it seems.
They do, yeah. And they're a strange side, the USA, this is. They have some really good players, but they never seem to really make it all click in one hit. Like, Jurgen Klinsmann is their manager now. They have the pieces in place. Obviously, Clint Dempsey is on the team, who plays at Seattle. One of those other guys who came back to the MLS during, probably the prime of his career. Chris Wondolowski's finally cracked the U.S. team, and he's paying dividends so far. Nine goals.
It feels like that took long enough for that.
I know. I mean, he's torn it up. I mean, for San Jose, he scored 80 goals in 142 league games, and he's duplicated that for the national team, 9-20. So, moving forward, up front they have the players. Obviously, the big omission this year is no Landon Donovan, which is, it's very surprising in my opinion. But, I think they have the forwards to maybe do some damage here. And I think their midfield is good too. Kyle Beckerman is a very good player, plays a role. Real Salt Lake. Michael Bradley, obviously, up here in Toronto. We've seen him play. He's incredible, basically. And Graeme Zusi of Sporting Kansas City. So they have some very good players, Rob. But how far they can go and what damage they can really cause is yet to be seen, because I don't think they've really proven it. They've struggled in some qualifying games and recent friendlies too. So, they squeaked by Azerbaijan a couple of nights ago. So, it's an up and down team for them.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about the Landon Donovan omission. You say that's surprising to you. I challenge that and say why. When you look at their forwards, Clint Dempsey, I think we can agree, is going to be an automatic starter for this squad. You imagine Wondolowski will play a role. I think we both agree that Aaron Johansson has potential to cause some damage within this group.
Yeah.
The one that stands out that maybe if you're going to play Donovan as a forward, you could have taken him instead of Jozy Altidore. But by the same token, Jozy Altidore offers something different at the forward position than these other guys do.
Yeah,
what are your thoughts?
Because Altidore's a bigger guy.
Yeah, exactly.
More of a physical presence, whereas
traditional target man, maybe a little less with the ball at his feet.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas Donovan's obviously quick, small. He's kind of a similar player, I guess, in a way to like Aaron Johansson and Chris Wondolowski. So in a way, you don't really want to have three of the same guys. But I don't see how you don't take probably the greatest player in American history.
See, but I said, how did you not take Kaká in Brazil?
And that's also true. That is true, and I stand by that one. This one is a little confusing to me. Donovan, I mean, he just broke the record for most MLS goals.
Almost right after the omission,
I know,
ironically.
Which is really, yeah, exactly. So, the guy's, he hasn't exactly lost a step. It is surprising, but, and I think it might affect how well he can do it. It's not the difference between, say, a quarterfinal and semifinal berth, but it might be the difference between maybe squeaking out of the group rather than going home after three games.
I think part of it might just be Klinsmann's mentality, too, of wanting to go with a little bit of a younger, fresher squad. I mean, Donovan has been the face of this team for how long now, and all
right.
The attention eyes are always on him. It might be a subliminal message to the rest of the squad that, this team is more than Landon Donovan. This team is more than one player. We need to come together collectively within a system in order to reach the next level.
Well, it's a gutsy move as well.
Yeah.
It's one that hasn't been met with a lot of popularity down in the U.S.,
Might mean that it's a good decision at the end of the day.
Yeah, exactly. The question here is, Aaron Johansson's going to be that guy who really has to step up now.
Yeah.
And he's played really well over for Alkmaar. He scored 20 goals in 39 league games for them since he's moved there. So, he's playing well. Doesn't have much experience at the U.S. level, though. But and he was also born in Iceland, so he's changed nationalities as well. So, but, he's going to have the pressure. Wondolowski's, we know what he can do. Clint Dempsey, he hasn't been great since he went to Seattle. I mean, he went back to Fulham on loan for a little bit too. So they have the chances. Oh, they got Tim Howard in goal, who's been just fantastic for Everton forever,
the ageless
it seems,
wonder.
Right? So, and defensively, you know, Omar Gonzalez has been a great player. Plays at LA Galaxy. DeMarcus Beasley's moved on to Europe now. He's moved and left the USA. Matt Bessler of Sporting Kansas City. So they have the pieces. They're good. And if they're in any other group, you think you could tip them. But I'm not sure if they can quite make it out of this group.
Another interesting point for me in this group, I wonder how you feel about this, is the what I call the USA-Ghana budding World Cup rivalry.
Yeah.
There. The fact that they're drawn together again after their previous history, when at the same time they're not the two most fancy teams in this group, I think it's a really intriguing storyline should it come down to one of these two squads to move on.
Yeah, it will be, because Ghana have eliminated the USA in the last two World Cups. You know, this Ghana side, though, if you look at them on paper, they have some really familiar names, Rob. Michael Essien, Sully Montari, Kwadwo Asamoah of Juventus, Christian Atsu of Vitesse, Mubarak Wakaso, Asamoah Gyan, Kevin Prince-Boateng, Jordan Ayew, and his brother Andre Ayew. They have a lot of players who are well-established in Europe, who have, you know, have good pedigrees. This Ghana side, they shocked the world a little in the 2010 World Cup by going as far as they did to the quarters, which is their best result ever. And there's no, you know, there's no reason to say why they can't do that again. It's just the fact they got to get past Germany and Portugal at some point, and even maybe the U.S.
Yeah, at the same time, we've discussed this in the past, too. A lot of it, unfortunately for some of these talented squads, comes down to the luck of the draw. I don't want to be so cliche
right.
with it, but, I mean, matchups
this is a case
matter.
Of that, though.
Absolutely. Like, USA and Ghana in their own right. I think when you look at some of the other groups, maybe if they were plotted in Group H, maybe if they were plotted in France's group, would have a better shot to go through. But I agree with you about Ghana. I remember, actually, Asamoah Gyan, everyone fell in love with them during their Cinderella run. I fell in love with him as a player, too. I thought he was absolutely fantastic and very talismanic and influential for them at the forward position. I think that the climate should be helpful for Ghana. I think, similar to Ivory Coast, not quite as old as Ivory Coast, but at the same time, if they're going to make another true impact, you think this might be the time?
If they're in an easier, it's almost at the same point. If they're
I'm trying
in
to talk you into this,
much of an easier group, they I would say absolutely. If they're in any other group, I think you got to consider them to get out of the group stage. It's just such a tough spot for them to be in. You know, like Asamoah Gyan is, you know, he went to Sunderland and kind of struggled quite a bit. Because at the time, going to the Premier League was considered, or it still is considered to be probably the pinnacle of European football. But he went there and kind of struggled after the World Cup where he, you know, as you said, some people fell in love with him. But now he plays in the UAE, which for a, you know, a player who is established and well-known as he is, it seems kind of a step back. But I mean, Rob, he's got 100 goals in 89 games since he went to the UAE, and 39 goals in 77 international games. So he's going at two, a goal every other game. It's just, for me, this Ghana side, they are good. I just can't see how they can get past. They have the experience. Michael Essien, a legend in Chelsea for the years he played there. Kevin Prince-Boateng, we know about him. Used to play at Milan. He plays at Schalke now in Germany. He was also raised in the German international youth level. He was a German citizen, but he, you know, takes Ghana residency now. So, you know, they have the players. They have the experience. It's just, it comes down to, can they edge out these other two big countries?
In my opinion, I think Germany is by far the class of this group. I believe that you do agree with me on that point. So I say if Ghana gets through, it would have to be at Portugal's expense. Is Portugal?
I think so, yeah.
Are they just truly a one-man band? Are they only what Ronaldo can do for them, or do you see more on the roster than just that? Can they go far if Ronaldo's not at his best?
No, I can't see them going far without Ronaldo playing well. You know, Argentina can get by without Messi.
Because they often have, unfortunately.
That is also true, because they have the firepower up front and in the midfield. Portugal is a very good team. But yeah, outside of Ronaldo, how far they can go is up for debate. You know, I guess their star international player outside of Ronaldo is kind of still Nani.
Yeah.
And he's been just terrible for United in the last, like, year or so.
And they're still relying primarily on Helder Postiga, who's never really
another ageless guy,
for
right?
them, too, yeah.
I mean, he has 27 goals in 66 international games, but he's moved around domestically a lot, it seems. You know, he's playing on loan at Lazio now. Hugo Almeida is also on this team still. He seems to be in a part of the Portuguese national setup for years and years and years. You know, in midfield, Rob, you know, Yao Moutinho plays at Monaco after leaving playing in Portugal. He's become a really good player since he went over there. And not that he wasn't before when he was playing at Porto. Raul Morales, former Chelsea player, part of the, you know, Jose Mourinho squad that won, you know, Premier Leagues and all that good stuff. you know, it's just the other big problem with me with this Portuguese side is that they actually left out Danny, who plays for Zenit St. Petersburg in Russia. He plays on the left wing. This is, for me, we're going to get into this next week, some of our starting 11 snubs. And for me, I can tell you right now, Danny will be on that team. I think he's a very good player. And I'm not sure quite why he's been overlooked for the World Cup. But, you know, this team, Ronaldo will take them as far as they can go. That's what it's going to come down to. You know, Helder Postiga, Hugo Almeida, Varela as well, who plays at Porto, who's got a pretty good goal-scoring record there. They can take Portugal, but they won't go as far as Ronaldo can carry them with all his goal-scoring.
What concerns me a little bit about the team, I imagine they're going to either go 4-2-3-1 or probably 4-3-3 with Ronaldo and Nani wide on the wings.
Right.
Their strength is clearly their wing play. Even Quintrao back there really brings the ball up well.
Yeah.
I just question where the creativity is going to come from if it's not wide. Like, internally, they have some strong guys in the middle, but they're primarily more like destroyer types, like the Morales, the Moutinho, winners. Yeah, Pepe. Their defense actually looks pretty good to me on paper, to be honest.
Yeah, it does.
I look at it.
It does.
But I just wonder where that creativity is going to come from. It's so much pressure on Ronaldo and Nani to create almost all their offense from the wings for a team that's primarily thought of as an offensive team.
And that's kind of the problem here. Like, Nani has always played pretty well for Portugal, and he's got to play well because, like you said, there's no creativity on this squad. Ronaldo's he's the best player in the world. But in some capacity, he's not the most creative player in the world either.
A little selfish at times.
And that too as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're going to rely on Nani. And Jean Martino isn't considered necessarily a playmaker. He's more of a holding midfielder. But he might have to get creative. Miguel Veloso as well is another guy. I think, like you said, their wing-backs are going to have to be important here. Fabio Contral coming down the left wing, Bruno Alves down the right. That's going to be where their strengths are going to come from, balls into the box, because Helder Postiga, Hugo Almeida are big targets to get that. Oh, no, a suit, obviously, of course, with Ronaldo.
I just don't see that traditional number 10 on their roster.
No, they don't.
Pull
that doesn't
the strings
exist.
And
that's why I think
dictate
that,
play.
And that, for me, is exactly why Danny should be on this team. Danny is that guy, and he just isn't here. And this is one of the ones that really baffles me. But, you know, I'll tell you one thing, Rob. One team that doesn't have any problems with influential playmakers is this German national side. They are stacked end-to-end. Rob and I were talking before we came on the air about this German midfield. Rob, I'm going to read you the name of their midfield, the midfielders they have on this team. We have Julian Draxler, Mario Götze, Sami Khedira, Toni Kroos, Thomas Müller, Mesut Ozil, Marco Reus, André Schürrle, and Bastian Schweinsteiger. It's scary.
Beyond loaded.
It's insane how good this German team is in the middle of the park.
Germany's been one of my favorite teams for years. I actually love their style of play. I love their structure. I love their work rate. For a team that is so structured and works so hard, they also just have such influential, creative players literally all over the pitch. They're loaded even Miroslav Klose, you can still count on. Like, say what you will, he's lost probably at least two steps.
Yeah.
You give him a half chance, the ball's going
still
going to
bury
at
it.
The end of the day. Podolski, we were also discussing, his goal rate and his caps are, they're up over 100, I believe.
Yeah, 112 games for his
at
country.
At his age.
And he's only 28. I mean,
it's crazy.
It's insane. He has 46 goals. He's been on fire for his country, but he seems to struggle still domestically a little. It's a really strange how his game can be up and down. Miroslav Klose, like you said, Rob, second highest goal scorer in World Cup history, highest scorer in German history, 68 goals in 131 games. I mean, the guy is, like you said, he's lost some steps, playing at Lazio now in Italy, but the guy just finds a way somehow, every time.
What about their midfield? I think we can agree that Thomas Müller will start for sure. He's excellent.
Yeah, that on the right wing, I'd say.
I think the biggest wild card for if Germany's going to take that next step and not be a quarters or out in the semis kind of team, I think Bastian Schweinsteiger needs to take his performance to the next level. Yeah. He's the guy who's able to take them further than they've been recently, which has been quite good, but not, you know, up to snuff. Germany, it's a World Cup or bust, not unlike Argentina or Brazil or some of the other massive countries out there. And Schweinsteiger's also dealing with a little bit of injury concerns of his own. I wonder how influential he's going to be able to be, because to me, he is the most important player on the German squad.
The other thing as well, this German midfield is, do they want to go experienced or do they want to take the young guys out and
Absolutely.
Put them in the middle of the park?
Are you going to start a Rus or what are you going to do with
them? Yeah, if you want to go young, you can start Julian Draxler, André Schürrle, Marco Rus, or do you want to go with the experience of like Bastian Schweinsteiger, Sami Khedira, and Mesut Ozil?
I would not start Khedira. I think he's been in awful form. We're going to touch on the Champions League a bit too. He was really, really poor. Modric was covering up for him all over the field. I think his best date has passed. I would not be featuring him much, maybe not unlike what you were discussing.
Toni Kroos is a similar player. Much younger and much better. So
even Schürrle, I'd be more comfortable playing there.
Exactly.
Like, it doesn't have to be a traditional destroyer-type defensive mid. I just don't think Khedira offers enough anymore going forward, or that you can count on him when you have all this other quality on the squad.
And just touching as well on their back line here, defensively, they, you know, this is Germany. I mean, they're, you know, one of the best countries in the world and arguably one of the couple of teams who are really favored to win the event, to win the tournament. Philipp Lahm is just an ageless wonder.
I believe they may be someone's pick on this show.
They might be. We will be touching on that next next week. We will reveal our picks. But, you know, Philipp Lahm, fantastic player for Bayern Munich. I mean, he's just short of 400 career games for Bayern, 105 games for Germany. Just, the guy is incredible. He plays in midfield, defense, right back. Play him wherever you want. Play him up front, probably would do well. I mean, the guy is a machine. Mats Hummels, Rob, told you this before, I'll tell you again right now. Hands down, probably my favorite defender in the world right now. I love his game, what he can do. He is just sublime, playing for Borussia Dortmund. Just a great, great defender. And, you know, and even when the goalkeepers are needed, it doesn't get much better than Manuel Neuer.
No, he's excellent. My question to you would be, do you think that this is the time that Germany is going to take it all? Do they have enough to go all the way? I'm a little bit concerned. This might sound ridiculous to you, but I'm a little bit concerned that they almost have too many options in midfield. And how is Joachim Löw going to be able to get it right? Mm-hmm. Is he going to be able to get his tactics spot on? Because you can't have too many of the guys who want to do the same thing and fill in the same space and play the same role. How do you see them kind of sorting out their squad, if you had to guess?
Well, if things start to go pear-shaped, they have the talent to move in and out if they want to. It's just like, I just don't see, like, they're so talented that there's always an option of where they can go and how to get better.
Or a way to change the game off the bench if it's not working.
Exactly. And there's so much talent. My actual concern with Germany is maybe goal scoring. Are they really going to rely on Miroslav Klose again? I mean, he's already said it's his last World Cup. You know, guys like Schweinsteiger get forward, but they're not necessarily goal hunters per se.
Yeah, so I wouldn't be fully comfortable with that. I like Götze as a player, but I wouldn't want him as a lone striker either.
No, not at all. The guy who probably might end up probably playing forward for this German side, on the official list, he's considered a midfielder, but Thomas Müller will probably end up playing up front.
Yeah, I could see it.
Maybe pairing with Lukas Podolski, bring Klose on when they want him. Because like we've said, Klose's a little past...
Support striker
a little past his sell-by date now.
Support striker for Podolski behind him, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this German team... phenomenal. I think they probably have the best squad in the whole tournament, actually. So
at the end of the day, safe to say we both expect the Germans, although it's going to be difficult to get first in the group, Matty.
Yeah, I think Germany will go through first. It's not going to be maximum points. It's, you know, all four teams in this group are phenomenal. But yeah, Portugal are going to come in second. I'm going to send home Ghana and the USA. Not easily, but they don't have the willpower and the firepower to keep up with, you know, the elite Germans and the very good Portuguese.
I have to agree with you on that one. I think Ronaldo, although he's just one man, he's one fantastic footballer. I think he's enough to see Portugal through. I do think he's been nursing a little bit of his own knocks, and he was also quite poor in the Champions League. Yeah. If he's not at his best, I do think there's a chance that Ghana could maybe just sneak by, because on paper, I don't know that their team is all that much less deep than Portugal is.
Yeah, I could see that happening, but it's a possibility. I don't think it will happen, but you can't rule it out.
Moving on to the final group, a much, I guess, less exciting Group H. We got Russia, upstart Belgium, Algeria, and South Korea. My initial thoughts on the group, I've seen quite a bit of Belgium. Being Croatian, they were in our qualifying group, and we faced them twice. Some friends of mine thought on past form that we were going to run away with this group. Quite the contrary, I said it was going to be very difficult. I've had Belgium as kind of my dark horse team for well over 2 years now. When you saw the players they had in their youth system, they were just absolutely loaded. My personal opinion of it, when you look at the draw, hasn't changed. I don't see any way this Belgium squad does not top Group H.
Completely agree. I love this Belgium team. Everything about it. They are young. They are fast. They are quick. They know how to score goals.
By all accounts, they're hungry too.
They just do everything right. I literally almost don't have a bad word to say about this Belgian team. They're my dark horse for this tournament. you know, to win the whole thing, not to, you know, make a quarterfinal. I mean to win the whole World Cup in Brazil.
You think this team could win the whole tournament?
I really do. They are that good. They're going to be under the radar. You know, they're not the Brazils, the Germanys, the Argentinas, the Spains. They're none of those countries, but they are almost, if not better than some of those teams.
There's a guy named Christian Benteke who is out, who's pretty influential for them. Have you ever heard of him?
Yeah, he's not a bad player.
Yeah.
But he's not going to be at the World Cup. He's injured, unfortunately. He plays at Aston Villa. So that kind of leaves Romelu Lukaku and Julius Mertens of Napoli as their two lone strikers, if you will.
Lukaku's a handful in his own right.
He's been very good. It's funny, he started the season at Chelsea on loan, missed a penalty in the final. The charity shield, that's what we call it back home in England these days. It's the name change is different now, but for us it's still the charity shield. And then he went to Everton on loan where he scored 15 goals in 31 games. So his form is as good as it can be. He's 8 goals in 28 games for his country too. Dries Mertens, former PSV player, 2 goals in 23 games country-wise. But they're going to be relying on him. He's a good player. Maybe he hasn't quite shown it at the international level yet, but you know, they have the pieces in place midfield-wise, Rob. It's fantastic. Nacer Chadli and Moussa Dembele, both of Spurs. Kevin De Bruyne, former Chelsea player, now at Wolfsburg. Marouane Fellaini, Rob, has been pretty awful for Man United since David Moyes brought him in a year ago.
He's been just a bust, yeah.
Just been awful. But at the end of the day, there's a reason he was as good as he was at Everton and why he's still on the World Cup team. His teammate, Adnan Januzaj at Man United, young guy, hasn't much experience internationally, but has played really well for United.
I think it's going to be too early for him.
I do too. I don't see him getting starts and playing time ahead of guys like De Bruyne, as we mentioned.
Matt,
Eden Hazard.
I have one for you here. We talked in the first show. I said to you that I think Ivan Rakitic is going to be someone who's going to explode on the scene for maybe the casual fan who doesn't know him. I think the exact same for Eden Hazard on Belgium.
Yeah, I would say that Eden Hazard is more well-known internationally.
Overall, perhaps. I guess because he plays for Chelsea.
I think people probably know him a little more than they do Rakitic. But, I think Eden Hazard's a great player. He's been great at Chelsea.
He's one of my favorites, too.
Yeah, he's one of my favorites to watch in the Premier League. Kevin Morales is at Everton. Axel Witsel at Zenit. Just, they have so much talent in midfield. It's not German-level talent, but it's just nearly as good. And they have one thing in common, Rob. Their youth system, as you mentioned earlier, just fantastic. And, this Belgian team, this isn't going to be one chance for them. They have a chance in 2018, and they're probably going to have similar players coming in 2022. They are that young, but they are that good.
My other thing that I would notice here, too, is just how strong the spine of this squad is as well. Look at their defense. Yep. Vincent Kompany, Man City. Daniel van Buyten, Bayern Munich. You got Vertonghen from Tottenham. Toby Alderweireld from Atletico, who, again, we just actually saw come on as a sub in that Champions League final. There's just
Thomas from Milan at Arsenal.
There's just a ridiculous amount of defensive options here. And you know how big I've been on every show that if you're strong at the back, your spine of your team is solid, it gives you the potential to do almost anything when you get to a tournament.
And exactly. I mean, they defend well. They score well. They have Thibaut Courtois in goal, who is probably the best young goalkeeper in the world right now. He's on loan at Atletico from Chelsea. It has been the last 3 years. It's been a strange situation, but when you have Petr Cech and goal at Chelsea, it's kind of hard to bench him. I mean, just and their backup goalie is Simon Mignolet of Liverpool. So just everywhere, this team is just, it's great. They are my dark horse. They're going through top of this group. The Russians are going to come in second. So we'll touch on the other couple of teams in the group. The Russian side is getting a little older. They're in age. But they still have the good players, Igor Denisov, Yuri Zhurkov, Viktor Fayzulin, Roman
Alexander
Shurkov,
Kurzhikov for the goals for Zenit.
Yeah. I mean, they have a good team. They're kind of getting up there. Like, they're all kind of around 30 years of age plus. So this could, especially with Russia hosting in 2018, they're going to be, the team we see this year is going to be very different than what we see in 2018. But this team is very good. I think they're maybe a quarterfinal team. I see
depending
them getting out
on
of the group.
Draw, I would agree.
Right,
they did struggle in Euro 2012. They did nothing there, but I mean, I don't see how they can't get out of a group like this. I don't rate Algeria or South Korea to have much of a shot in this group at all.
No, I don't either. Just Russia. I mean, we've always said how good Belgium are. Russia are just, they're too good for the other two countries. I mean, Russia have never even made it out of the group stage, and they're not going to get a better chance than this year. Algeria, South Korea. I mean, South Korea made that wonder run in 2002 to the semifinals.
Yeah.
They got some good players kicking around. Song Heung-min of Bayer Leverkusen, only 21, 6 goals in 24 games for his country. Ki-Sung Yang of Swansea spent some time on Sunderland on loan. Kimbo Kyung of Cardiff is another good midfield. This is where this team is good, Rob. They're really good in midfield. They're young. They're hungry, as we said before, about a couple of other sides. And Park Chu-young of Arsenal. We say he's of Arsenal. He's played one game. But he spent time in the last 2 years at Celta Vigo and Watford. But he made his name in Monaco. But for his country, Rob, he's got 24 goals in 63 games. So, you know, the South Korea side, they got some options, but they don't have the talent to get past, you know, Russia and Belgium here.
Yeah, I would agree. On a personal level, from the Algeria side, they do have little-known Hilal Soudani from Dinamo Zagreb in the Croatian league.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen him play on a couple of occasions. Yeah, he's been with Dinamo since 2013. 16 goals, 30 appearances, nothing to sneeze at. I mean,
and 10 and 20 for his country.
Yeah, the HNL is a reasonably decent league in Croatia, but it's really a two, maybe three-team league. You have Dinamo Zagreb, Hajduk Split, and Rijeka make some noise here and there. But, I mean, it's clearly not up to the snuff of, you know, the Englands and the Italys and those other groups. So I don't put too much stock into that. But, I mean, he might be one guy to keep an eye on who could maybe help Algeria pick up a couple goals or a point out of this group. But I see no hope for either of them advancing. I'm with you. It's Belgium 1, Russia 2.
Yeah, I kind of disagree with you on that. I think this might be maybe the easiest group to pick,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah, it was almost automatic when we were discussing it earlier. Moving on, Matty, I watched all of the Champions League. What were your thoughts on the match? I think Atletico defended well. They were a really game squad. They had good fight within them and within their ranks. I really hated the move of Costa starting. I told everyone who'd listened before the game, if they do that, that's a mistake. They had to waste a sub on him early in a match that ultimately ended up going the distance, I'm sure, even for time wasting at the end when Ramos tied it late off of Luka Modric's corner. Maybe that corner and opportunity doesn't happen if you have that extra snub, but we'll never know, or the extra sub, but you'll never know at this point. I think Real dictated the game. It didn't show on the scoreboard quite as much as it should have, maybe in the beginning, and then maybe it flattered them too much at the end.
Yeah.
But for me, they were full marks for their victory. Godin scored a nice goal for Atletico, but in my opinion, they didn't do nearly enough going forward to hold off a team of Real's pedigree.
For me, Real played well, but I think they were also terrible at the same time, if that's even somewhat possible. Like you said, the 4-1 scoreline really flattered them, but they were just going forward. They created chances, but
I don't know if I've seen Bale and Ronaldo play worse than they did in this game.
I thought Gareth Bale had probably the worst game of his career.
And then oddly enough, they both ended up scoring.
They did, Bale actually had the game-winning goal.
Yeah.
Gareth Bale was just awful. He was really, really bad. And Ronaldo wasn't really all that much better either. You know, I think it's always cruel when you score in the 93rd minute to tie a game. And you feel for Atletico. I mean, part of the reason I wanted them to see them win the league so much was in case something like this happened. And, you know, they got the La Liga title to sit back on, which is nothing to scoff at. I think, actually, you know, man of the match always goes to the winning side, Rob, the player on the winning side. But for me, Gabby for Atletico was just brilliant. I mean, he was just brilliant. And it came out today, Rob, that he's been playing the last 6 weeks or so of a broken rib. So, I mean, that guy is just committed. Phenomenal player. You mentioned the Diego Costa stuff. To me, it seems as though it was just like a nice little here, we appreciate everything you've done for us. We think you're leaving. You probably are leaving to go to Chelsea, as it's rumored.
And perhaps we'll ruin you for Spain.
maybe that as well. So, you know, it's unfortunate that happened. I was surprised when I saw him in the lineup, but you just knew he wouldn't last. And it sucked. Like you said, it's unfortunate the way it happened. And then, you know, the manager, Simone, as well, he made that decision, and then he went absolutely bonkers towards the end of extra time.
Oh, that was embarrassing.
Almost like a full-on fight almost broke out. It's just, which
is strange. Amateur hour out on the pitch there.
It was strange because you watch him during the game, and, you know, when Raul started scoring and equalizing, he started running to his fans saying, let's go, let's cheer. And then he acts like a moron at the end. It was really odd, but that's the way he is. He's always been like that. When he played, he was the same way.
I was going to say, I'm sure your countrymen are familiar with him ever since that Beckham incident as well.
Yes. Yes, thank you.
He's always renowned for being a hothead. It's funny that you did mention that you thought Real Madrid didn't play well but played well at the same time. To me, anything they created went through Di Maria and Modric. I think they did nothing positive other than that. Those guys created chance after chance. Seemingly, their top guns, like, did Benzema play? I think I heard his name three times.
They could have just put 10 men at them because that's how bad Benzema was.
They could have put me up there and I could have done just as little.
Exactly.
Next to nothing.
But as you mentioned, Modric's played extremely well, and I thought Angel Di Maria was probably player of the game on Real Madrid's side, that is.
Well, let's not sell Sergio Ramos short, too.
And
he
too.
Just brought in his Madrid
when
pride
that guy
there at the
is
end.
Kind of keeping his head on a swivel. I don't think there's maybe too many better players in the world defensively than him. I mean, he's a great header of the ball, and he scores big goals for his club and country.
Matty, quick thoughts of yours on the TFC Montreal first leg of the Amway Cup.
I mean, 1-1 draw in the first leg, played here last night at BMO.
I think the away goal's huge.
It is. Donil Henry scored for TFC in the first half, and then Justin Mapp got the equalizer for Montreal. Defoe didn't start last night either, and I think it was obvious the absence of Michael Bradley. I think the away goal for Montreal might be what decides this tie now.
I imagine it has to be advantage Montreal. Toronto FC needs to score a goal to go through.
Yeah, they need a goal to at least take it to even extra time or anything. So, no, I guess that kind of changes the tactics for Ryan Nelson. They know they have to attack moving forward next week. The next game, the second leg, is Wednesday night. So, yeah, advantage Montreal, but, you know, the good
all
thing
to
about
play for though, no?
Exactly, right? I mean, that's the great thing about MLS is and football in general is that you're never out of it, really, until the final whistle goes. And I think this is the case of that next week.
Well, Matt, incredibly, that's it for our group roundups.
Another half an hour flying by, and
we've gone through
all
the groups, but that's not it for Footy Roundup. We will be back next week, as Matt mentioned, with our starting 11 top snub lists. I guess we're each going to have a list of names for you that we are shocked are not taking part in the World Cup. We're going to touch upon some other issues, such as some injuries. You know, some big ones happened the last week. Van der Vaart, Lars Bender for Germany, Kranjčar's out for Croatia. We'll talk about some of those. And we're also going to talk about our finals predictions, dark horses, we expect as favorites for the Golden Boot. Any quick thoughts on that one? Or are you going to save the bullet?
Save the bullet. Make you guys all tune in next week. And also, we're going to also talk about who some young players are to watch for in the tournament too.
Absolutely. You know, the World Cup's drawing near. We're only 15 days away. You know how close it is once I'm coming around to school and I see the car flags are starting to sprout up everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. We're getting close and it's getting more and more exciting by the day.
Thank you for tuning in and listening to us, Footy Roundup. We'll be back same time, same station next week. Cheers for listening.